Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcoming John Kernert. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me back. It's nice to hear your voice again.
Yeah. You were on quite a while ago with Why the CIA Killed JFK and Malcolm X. That was an interesting show. One of the better ones, too, I've had on the JFK, and we've had everyone from Roger Stone to you name it. But I enjoyed that one the best, one of the best.
I appreciate that. You know, it was a good discussion. You know, there's so much to talk about with the assassination. Of course, it was 55 years ago on Thanksgiving. So
yeah, pretty weird.
The nation marked that. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of crazy because there's just been so many theories and so much talk and so many books and it's just crazy. One thing I will say I noticed about yourself is that you're kind of out of it as far as the group that fights a lot. Like, you know, because I have to be part of all that social media. And when you get in the JFK groups, you know, like Roger Stone's calling Max Holland a liar and threatening Joan Mellon, don't you be healthier if you didn't show up at this year's. Like, I mean, they get really, really into this. And
back oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking, you're one that doesn't really get into that.
Yeah, I try to stay above the fray, you know. And just stick with my own research. And I feel like my new book about John F. Kennedy Jr. is, I think, kind of an extension of some of the theories about President Kennedy.
Right. And I found that to be really interesting. It caught me right away. I'm surprised no one else has brought this up. I'm surprised it hasn't been talked about. And it's been 20 years, you know. It's like, so you did Exploding the Truth, and that's the JFK Jr. assassination. So tell me, what brought you into the JFK Jr. part of it?
Well, I mean, a lot of different things. As a teacher of U.S. history, as a professor of U.S. history, I mean, I've always been interested in conspiracies and the Kennedy family, and just looking at the way the agency has targeted this family, and you look at this in the book, Robert Kennedy, President Kennedy, even Teddy Kennedy, there's been any number of things that they've done to target the family, and I just felt that it just would make sense to me that there would be the same type of approach and anger towards the only surviving son of President Kennedy. And if you look at his death, all the things that we assume about it are just not even true. I mean, ask anyone about JFK Jr.'s death, and they'll say, well, you know, the weather was bad that night, or he crashed the plane because his leg was hurting him, or maybe the plane, he was suffering from spatial disorientation. It was all his fault. And there was no one that said anything else different, no witnesses that could corroborate in a different story. All those things are not even true, but just the most basic looking at the facts, we can easily just prove that this was not an accident.
Well, you know, that's what I mean. That's why I'm so surprised, because, you know, things, especially in the last couple of years, I mean, it's really blown up with conspiracy and theories. And you know, I'm surprised Hillary didn't do it, you know, or something. You know what I mean? There's just so much conspiracy out there now. I just don't know. I'm surprised that this has been one that's quiet all along. Because I think when I look back on things, when I see JFK Jr., I think he was kind of the perfect person to be a candidate for president, for Senate. I mean, he seemed to have it all, the name, the looks. He seemed smart. He would have been a perfect candidate, especially from what we been getting the last 20 years, you know.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I think that's why we should remember him and not forget about him, because he's the kind of person, his example, is a person that we're missing today and that could bring our polarized country together, just remembering him. And I think it's such a shame that he had to leave us so soon. If he was thinking about, in fact, planning for running for governor of New York in 2002, and that was his path to the White House. So he had given up the idea of running for Senate, and I think that's important to mention, too, because there's this theory you mentioned, the Clintons may have killed him. Nothing
right,
further from the truth, yeah. He was not going to be not killed by the Clintons. Yeah. They were very close. He was not going to run for Senate. In fact, JFK Jr. in his magazine, George, never did anything to criticize President Clinton. He even sent President Clinton a fax to the White House that said, when I was a kid, I actually could fit under the desk, so I know that an intern could not fit under the desk.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was a big supporter of President Clinton, so
yeah.
We can rule them out.
Well, yeah, it just, you know, it just seemed like that last year, you know, the terrible Vegas shooting, and then there's, like, rumors she was on the fourth floor, and she programmed him, and then I was just getting it. So it got to where the last 6 months we were doing on the show every day I'd say, what did Hillary do? It didn't matter what we were talking about, because it just
right. It
kind of gets a little bit silly, and I don't know, you know, I don't know if people realize, I'm certainly not saying that she's an angel, but you know, it kind of gets a bit much, you know.
It does get to be a bit much, and you talk about conspiracy theories. And you mentioned, why has no one done this before? Well, I think a couple of different reasons. I mean, one is that it did take a number of years for people to start questioning the JFK assassination, especially when witnesses were dying that had talked about it. Even Nina Rhodes Hughes, you might remember, she came out a few years ago, and she said that she saw another gunman at the Robert Kennedy assassination, and she kept her mouth shut for years because she wouldn't be killed. So I think the same thing can be said for JFK Jr.'s assassination. There are many witnesses to this horrible event that have kept quiet, too. And it's scary for people to talk about these things. The other thing is, if you start talking about conspiracies, you can be labeled a nut. But J.P. Ventura said, if people say that to you, he can respond to them, have you studied the facts? There are some legitimate cases where you need to answer some serious questions that, in this case with JFK Jr.'s death, we need to question the official version of events. There are some serious things that need to be answered.
Yeah, for sure. And I personally, I don't think there's nothing wrong with conspiracy. There's nothing wrong with, there's wrong with doing it, but with talking about conspiracy or a plan, it's just really someone planning to do something right. that's evil and all that. It's just, I think what's happened is it's become an art with people like, you know, Alex Jones, you know?
Right.
Where it becomes so far, you know, like, you know.
So far-fetched. Yeah. The Pizzagate conspiracy, things like that.
Yeah.
Just stupid stuff.
It starts to get really kind of, this is really, really bad. But that, I think that's the problem, because that gets the attention. Then all of a sudden, if you come up with anything in between there, people roll their eyes, you know. So
let me give you an example. Look at what's going on in Saudi Arabia. Their government, according to our CIA, conspired to kill a journalist. So, I mean, it happens in modern times. There are conspiracies. President Lincoln was killed by a conspiracy. I mean, these things do happen. But again, you have to follow the facts. That's the thing.
Well, that's a problem lately.
That is a key problem, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of, again, that's something else, you know. It's crazy. Well, so what now, so the official ruling on this was the spatial disorientation, you know, descending mm-hmm. over water at night, and his lack of flying experience is kind of, I think, what they're sort of swaying toward is what, why he got into the trouble with the plane and crashed. What was your answer to that?
Right. We can pretty easily say all those things are wrong, which is some basic facts. I mean, one thing, and let's go with his flying experience. The NTSB and the FAA and the media investigated his flying record, and I found this out too, that he had flown that same flight from New Jersey to Hyannisport 17 times without a flight instructor, and 5 times at night. He also passed an instrument test on April 22nd, 1998, with a hood on. He had this test where the plane was crashing, and he recovered the aircraft with a hood on. So he was given the conditions of spatial disorientation and recovered the aircraft with expert precision. He knew how to use autopilot. He knew how to do that flight. Did it 5 times at night and 17 times without a flight instructor. So he knew what he was doing. Ralph Howard and Harold Anderson, his 2 flight instructors, both said he was a very good pilot. Now, let's go to the other point here, the weather that night. The FAA hired a specialist named Edward Meyer. He was in LaGuardia Airport, and he studied the weather that night, and he concluded that the weather was fine. There was nothing could cause spatial disorientation. In fact, many people were walking the beaches that night, fishing and having a good time because it was such a nice, warm July evening. So the weather was fine. He was a great pilot. And the third thing, we can kind of put the final nail in the coffin here of this idea that he was somehow disoriented, is this. It's such a key thing to mention. So he takes off 8:39 p.m. And 1 hour into the flight, at 9:39 p.m., he calls into air traffic control at Martha's Vineyard Airport and tells them he's about to land the aircraft. And so if anything was wrong with him or the aircraft, he would have said so then. He did not say that. He said he's going to drop off, learn to set. And then 1 minute later, there was an explosion. And 3 people on the ground witnessed this. So we have all these different factors that can lead us to conclude that there was nothing wrong with him or the aircraft.
So what kind of an explosion are we talking about? Are we talking about an actual man-made bomb or something, or are we talking something something happened with the motor, the engine?
Now, what people witnessed was a flash of light and a deafening sound. So we're talking about a massive explosion. Now, Kennedy was very meticulous with his aircraft. It was a new aircraft, Piper Saratoga, state-of-the-art. He checked it obsessively. So the chance that anything was wrong with it is very slim to none. It was state-of-the-art aircraft, very new. He looked at every nut and bolt according to all his flight instructors. He checked for every takeoff. So likelihood of it being a mechanical defect is very, very slim. So we also know that 3 people on the ground witnessed this explosion. And interesting to mention this too, just this past week, I got an email from a person And she said that she's kept quiet over the years. She's heard me on Coast to Coast, and she said she emailed me. She's worried about her safety, and she's kept quiet because she was there that evening walking the beach, and she saw the same thing the other three people saw. Her first name, I'm not going to give her name's Vicky. I'm not giving her last name, but for her own safety. So at least four people saw this explosion, this flash of light.
Wow. So now, now on the plane with him was his wife Carolyn Bissett and sister-in-law Lauren Bissett.
Right.
Now, so do you think the explosion was there? Was it aimed at getting? I guess obviously you're believing that it's aimed at getting John, and it didn't matter about the other two ladies for whoever was trying to do this.
Right. Well, it would take out his chance for having an heir, too. I mean, if you're taking out his wife as well, both of them are dead, especially if she's pregnant, and you have the entire family, for the son and the wife dead. We would also mention as well that there is a massive blast radius here, too. So there's 17 nautical miles of debris that's found. Even things on land, like luggage and sneakers, indicate the breaching of the cabin. So it seems like there was, as people were witnessing on the ground, this massive explosion.
So now, with that, it also it took them a few days to find the bodies, didn't it?
It's also unusual, too. That brings us to the idea of the cover-up here. So that area is just about 100 feet of water. And I've talked to some people that have lived there. The water is not very deep. It's relatively clear. It's good for fishing. So they know exactly, talking about the Coast Guard and the Navy and the CIA, the three agencies that were involved with recovery, CIA, Coast Guard, Navy, they knew exactly where his plane dropped off of radar. And the water is not very deep. But given those two factors, it took them 5 days to recover the bodies, and no one was allowed in during that time. The Kennedy family was not allowed in, or the media, for 5 days. And when the bodies were recovered, it was unusual because they were cremated. There was no open casket during the funeral, and they were cremated and buried at sea. So there was no chain of evidence looking at what the bodies and how they were recovered. The autopsy for JFK Jr. actually has dotted lines across his midsection as if his body was blasted into two pieces. So we have that being strange in terms of the recovery effort.
Now, did people know that he was going to be taking that flight that night? Like, was this something that was planned and there would be enough people that knew about it?
Absolutely, for one key reason, yeah, is because Roy Kennedy was getting married that weekend in Hyannisport. It was one of the biggest events of the social season. So all the Kennedy family was heading there that night. So it was well known he'd be heading up there that night to join them on that weekend. And ironically enough, 30 years before was Chappaquiddick, when they had another Kennedy family party that ended in a disaster for Ted Kennedy. So it was that weekend in 1969, a tragedy struck the Kennedy family too.
Well, you know, the Kennedy curse, as they say.
Absolutely. You know. It just keeps going on, yeah.
Yeah, it's
crazy. Another thing, yeah. It just keeps going. I mean, Ted Kennedy, too, I mentioned this in the book, he almost died in an airplane crash in June 1964. So it's just a series of strange things that happen. And we can mention, too, and this brings to mind the crash itself. If you had to kind of say, well, what's your best evidence that there is conspiracy? I'd probably say this one right here. So the Pepper Saratoga had a rescue beacon, a state-of-the-art rescue beacon. So emergency locator beacon, it goes off when the plane crashes, and it stays on for 7 days. It's this high-pitched, shrill sound. You can't mistake it. So ABC News with Peter Jennings on July 17th, they report that at 2:15 a.m., the Coast Guard and the Navy are closing in on this rescue beacon at 2:15 a.m. on July 17th. They found the Pepper Saratoga, that's what they report. And then something just kind of blows your mind happens. The Navy tells ABC News and NBC News that it's not the Piper of Saratoga. It's, in fact, a crashed Navy military aircraft. Now, just let that sink in for a second. They're saying, well, no, we have not found the Piper of Saratoga. We have found one of our own Navy aircraft. And then for some reason, ABC News and NBC News just let the story go. Because not JFK Jr.'s plane, they don't ask some pretty obvious questions. What do you think they should ask at this point in time? What would be obvious questions? Like,
well, what was that plane doing out there?
Right, yeah.
And
right, what was that plane? Yeah.
Yeah, like you'd start to kind of go, well, who was on that plane? What was that plane there? What was its purpose? And how did it, you know, there's a lot of questions you could go.
Right, I mean, where is the body from that? Because if there is a Navy aircraft emitting another rescue beacon, that means it crashed. And there is, who's the pilot? He eject? Is he dead? Be notified? Where is the wreckage for that? None of these questions were asked by anyone in the media. Just kind of let that explanation go, this excuse. So then you got to ask some more questions. If there is an actual naval aircraft in the waters there, did it collide with JFK's plane deliberately, accidentally? Is that what caused the explosion? Is it an accident? I mean, there are so many things that could have been questioned there that just kind of get let go because it wasn't JFK's plane. So if it's not another naval wreckage, because think about that. If there's another aircraft there, they have to, with the family, they have to be covered up. They have to evacuate the wreckage. That's hard to do. So it's probably not that. It's probably they actually did find Piper of Saratoga at 2:15 a.m. Think about it. I just mentioned it. They know where the plane left the radar. The water is very shallow. It wouldn't take long to find them. So it makes sense they'd find it about that time, about 7 hours later. So what the Navy did there and the Coast Guard, they lied for some reason. Yes, you ask the question, why would they lie? Well, give themselves some more time to make it look like an accident, not an explosion. So that lie about their own aircraft is very strange. Make this even more strange, you can't confuse those two beacons. A rescue beacon for the Saratoga sounds, like I said, this high-pitched, shrill sound. A rescue beacon for a naval aircraft is like a foghorn. They're way different. You can't confuse them. So all this is very strange, that lie that they made at 2:15 a.m. It doesn't make any sense.
So here we have it. Now, who would be behind it?
Then you have to ask that question, too, because you have here obvious evidence of a cover-up, an explosion. An official report doesn't make any sense. So then you have to ask the question, who would want to kill JFK Jr.? Well, we just ruled out the Clintons. It's not going to be them. And you have to leave, you're left with the, I think, obvious conclusion. It must be the CIA. That agency has made it their business to target this family. And just this past year, last year, you might have heard the news that Sirhan Sirhan was visited by Robert Kennedy's son, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Yeah.
And he came to the conclusion that the agency killed his father. So they've done this before. They did this with President Kennedy. And I think once we get to 1999, JFK Jr. is, at this point in time, he's going to run for governor, for the White House. He's going to expose the truth of his father's assassination. So he becomes a threat, too.
So now, you know, what comes to mind to me is quite often, it's funny how this is, that whenever there's some conspiracy or these problems or these deaths and murders, it's always sort of blamed on a Democrat, like Clinton or something. But yet when it goes the other way, it just goes to CIA. Now, instead of being biased, could it just be that someone like George Bush, who was part of the CIA, was just involved and thought of himself as a CIA rather than presidential candidate?
Well, then you have to go back and talk about Bush's role in the agency and JFK Jr.'s own doubts about the official version of events. So Meg Azzioni is interesting to talk about here. This is JFK Jr.'s high school girlfriend, and she writes a book about her relationship and friendship with this young man in the 1970s. And she talks about in the book how, as a young man, JFK Jr. was starting to question the official version of events of his father's death. And it spends the next, about 15, 20 years kind of on his own doing his own investigation. And he concludes that it's likely that the agency killed his father, like we concluded, and the people concluded too.
So what kind of relationship did Kennedy Jr. have with someone like...
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
George Bush.
Well, the relationship was kind of tense. I mean, when JFK Jr. died, the Bush family was at a place called the Bohemian Grove in California. They couldn't be found for several days. His press secretary couldn't reveal where he was. So he refused to give any comment about JFK Jr.'s death. And it was, again, I think very strange he chose that time to decide to disappear from the public. He could have offered some condolences to the family, and instead he decided to hide for several days at the Bohemian Grove. Both Bushes dead.
So do you feel there was some sort of a threat that they felt with Kennedy Jr. then? Do you think that it's sort of not only a dislike, but some sort of threat of some sort to actually kill someone like that?
Well, I think you have to understand, I think, the hatred that this agency has toward the Kennedy family. It goes back so far in U.S. history, and it really begins with the Bay of Pigs invasion. And at that point in time, when JFK refuses to provide air support to the Cuban invaders, they feel that he is soft in communism, and they start to sabotage the Peace Corps as a result. In fact, to this very day, you can't join the Peace Corps if you've ever been in the agency. It's on their website. In fact, the Bay of Pigs invasion was named Operation Zapata, which is after the name of George Bush's oil company, and the two ships were named Houston and Barbara. So he was part of the planning for the Bay of Pigs invasion, George H.W. Bush. And they go forward in time in the summer of 1962, when JFK is taking power away from the agency and giving it to the military. There's peace in Laos. We talked about that in another show we did. There's anger there that is directed against him. So it goes very far back.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of scuttle or talk about George Bush being part of the JFK assassination as well. I don't know how much proof or what ties him to it other than, I guess, him being in the area.
Well, there are two things that we can tie him to the assassination with. Two very specific things. Jim Garrison uncovered some important evidence that he was arrested when he left the Dell Tech building and taken to Dell's police headquarters and then let go, taken back to Dealey Plaza. So he definitely was there. And we also can tie him to a very specific person that was in the plaza too. Now, when the assassination takes place, after it's over, the people descend into chaos. They run up the hill looking for the second gunman in the grassy knoll. But these two men decide to sit down on the curb on Elm Street. One has been nicknamed Umbrella Man. The other was nicknamed Dark Complected Man. And they sit down and just say nothing to each other, get up and walk away. And they probably have walkie-talkies in their back pockets. These are the last two people that JFK saw in his life. The umbrella man, oh, he pumped the umbrella and twirled it when JFK got throat shot, and Dark Complected Man rose his arm into the air when JFK got his throat shot. So Dark Complected Man has been identified by researchers, including Jim Mars, as being a guy named Orlando Bosch. And Orlando Bosch was an agent of the CIA. And this man was a Cuban who was part of the Bay of Pigs invasion, who was hired by President, at that point in time, CIA agent George H.W. Bush. And this man, all throughout his career, is helped by George H.W. Bush in many different things. He becomes a terrorist. He becomes an agent, an assassin in the agency. Bush gives him extradition rights to go to hide in different countries to avoid prosecution. He does many things under the agency when Bush is director of the agency in the 1970s. And that man was right there in Dealey Plaza, and Bush hides from him many times throughout his life.
Was there anybody else in JFK Jr.'s life or world that he would have had to worry about?
Well, when we get to the end of his life, he is positioning himself to do a couple different things that come tying to your question. So he wants to make it clear to his family and friends he's going to sell the magazine and then use the final part of the magazine's life to do an investigation into the JFK assassination. And the other thing he's going to do once the magazine is sold and that final part of the purpose of the magazine is served, then he's going to run for governor of New York and then for president of the United States. So this would position himself against, of course, George W. Bush. And those two things, I think, kind of coalesce together at the end of his life.
Huh. And George Magazine, the problem he had with Michael Berman, that wouldn't be anything?
Well, I think it's kind of a minor thing. Even we mentioned kind of the idea that know, the dead end here is the Israeli connection to the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin. You know, he talks about that in his magazine too. So there are motives of others, you know, that you can tie in there as well. But again, if you just kind of reverse engineer this, which is what I like to do, and you're like, look at what Sherlock Holmes would look at this, where you have certain conclusions you can make, you go backwards from there, and you must have someone that would want to kill him. So if the crime scene doesn't make any sense, if he wasn't suffering from disorientation, if the weather was good, if there was an explosion, if they're lying to the public about the rescue beacon, if all these things are true, which they are, then there must be someone there that wanted to do all these things.
So what do you think people will find most shocking when they read the book?
The part about the rescue beacon just shocks me, because right there you have evidence of a conspiracy. Because if you think about that logically, you can't confuse those two beacons. The Navy knows they're rescue beacons. They're not like an aircraft that's from a civilian. So if they're telling the public, which they initially did, we found the Piper Saratoga, and then they tell this, Peter Jennings and ABC News and also NBC News, they found the aircraft, which they would have found because, as I said, it's 100 feet of water, and they know where the aircraft went down. It takes 5 days to recover an aircraft. If they lie to the public, the Navy lied to the public and the Coast Guard, and we know for a fact that they cannot have covered this up, because where is the wreckage? Where is the dead pilot? Then we can conclude that there's a conspiracy. And that, I think, is what's the most shocking here. And from that point forward, no questions were asked. What makes you want that aircraft on? Where's the wreckage? Where's the pilot? And all these different things were never questioned by the media. And we're still asking questions 20 years later that don't have the answers to.
So what do you hope happens moving forward with the information and now your new book? Like, what are you hoping that will come out of this?
Well, what my main hope is, once we get to X5, we're going to be told that his leg was hurting it. Let's go through that, first of all. On the day before the accident, on July 15th, Thursday morning, he has the cast removed from his leg. He goes through the entire Thursday, works out, goes to a Yankees game, leg is fine. Goes to the whole Friday afternoon, too, works out again, nothing wrong with the leg. He stops into a store to get some water for the flights. The store attendant asks him, how's the leg doing? He says, it feels fine. He takes off from the aircraft with the pedals, no problem. Hour of flight, nothing, no incident. So we'll be told next summer his leg was hurting him. Not the case. We'll be told next summer he was a bad pilot. Not the case either. He flew that flight 17 times with an instructor, 5 times at night. We'll be told that there was no evidence of an explosion. That's not true either. So my hope is this book, you can use this as a tool for the truth. When you're told all these lies next summer, you can use this to show everyone around you that this is what really happened and not those misinformation, those lies.
Yeah, pretty interesting case. How do you find the response for it, for your book and for JFK theorists, I'll say?
It's been very good. A few people have been detractors, but then they've only been detracting based on misinformation. I mean, one man had called up one of the shows I was on, and he was claiming that JFK was some kind of wild pilot that took risks and things. And I tried to explain to him that's just not the case. He was meticulous. He had 700 hours of flight time. I mean, if you just look at the facts of the case, then you can follow the logic of it. And I mentioned as well, it was interesting to me in revealing that this lady emailed me just last week. She said she heard me on Coast, and she's been concerned about her safety. She was there that night, walking the beaches. She said she saw exactly what these other three witnesses saw, but she was scared for her life. She kept herself quiet because we know what happened to other witnesses, the JFK assassination. They were scared for their lives. Many of them died. So again, her first name is Vicky, like I said, last name, but I'm sure the witnesses are out there too. So So it's this evidence that there's more out there. There is a climate of fear around this, and they want it to be taken away from. They shouldn't be afraid anymore, but the truth.
Yeah, it's a tough one to do, but, you know, it's tough to there was so much to do with assassination and killing, and especially around the Kennedys. So it's not so easy to forget. I don't know what to say. So now the books can be found anywhere. Your book is out in all major bookstores, I imagine, Amazon and all that, and we'll have it on our site. Now, one thing I noticed too, hey, you also have a paranormal side.
Definitely, yeah.
So what?
Yeah.
That surprised me. Not so much that you could do both, but it's just I don't come across that too often. So you did a book called Haunted Rochester, and you do a paranormal walk or something. So what exactly, what's your interest in paranormal?
Well, again, I also, like you said, I do these walking tours in the Buffalo area. We do them in Buffalo, Lockport, Hamburg, where I grew up, in Western New York. And they cover the broad range of the paranormal, you know, things like folklore, Native American legends, vampire stories, ghost stories, folklore, things that are unusual, UFO reports, anything that covers the broad range of the paranormal. So that kind of history interests me, the stuff that's the unexplained side of the world, the odd things. And these walks kind of bring them together. Western New York has a very rich variety of things that I talk about on these walks. And I've been doing them for about 7 years now. And some are based off my own books, all research that I've conducted. And they're a lot of fun. You know, we do them every September and October. And the website is paranormalwalks.com.
What's the most shocking paranormal thing you've had happen? You run across a ghost or something, or?
Well, this one story kind of got me. There was this one building that had this legend of little girl ghosts, and I was talking to the staff there, and this one skeptic said that she heard the legend too, heard the stories, but wanted absolute proof that they existed. So she walked up to the attic, made sure no one was in the building. Locked the attic door, shut off the lights, put a chair down in the middle of the attic, and she said, if you girls are here, I want some absolute proof that you're here. So all of a sudden, she feels these cold little fingers forcing her eyes open. So it's like with little kids when you're asleep, if you're a parent, they'll wake you up by forcing up your eyelids, and these little girls did that to her. And she's now no longer a skeptic.
Well, no, I would guess not. Wow, that's great. That's quite the jump. Do you plan on continuing with that, or keeping the paranormal walking going and doing more books, maybe?
Oh yeah, this is my life's calling. I really enjoy this sort of stuff. My day job is of course teaching social sciences. But this is what the fun side of my life, writing the books, doing the ghost walks, the paranormal walks. And, we didn't just in the fall, but they change every year. We do add new stories and sites, and it keeps it interesting for me anyway, that we keep adding things in.
Wow. So have you ever taken a psychic or gone in around where JFK Jr. crashed?
That's not a bad idea. Speaking of that, I could mention too that I did have a psychic contact me about the event.
Oh yeah.
And she had mentioned a couple different things that were corroborating what I was saying. And she asked not to have her name revealed or too much information about, but she was saying that the things I was mentioning were lining up with what he had understood about the area too. And I could tell you her name and all the details that went off the air. But she was, again, when I went on Coast, I got a lot of positive feedback, including her. And again, it just seems like people are waiting to have this come out now. They've been dying to have someone kind of bring this to the light, because this is the first book ever done about this. And it's time for people to be able to talk about this and feel comfortable revealing what they know about it.
Well, what do you think is going to happen, or what do you think would happen? How would people react if they found some proof and they found out who was behind it?
I think it would take a large support from the Kennedy family to get that going. And I have faith, because I mentioned this, it's such an interesting thing to point out that Robert Kennedy's son, he visited Sirhan Sirhan, RFK's, one of RFK's assassins, and he has concluded the agency killed his father. And it was even mentioned by the news very much even. So if he's willing to understand the agency killed his father, and there's questions that need to be raised about his cousin's death, we really need to have some hope that could happen. People can insist on the truth investigation.
Now, so when you say the CIA, do you think that they've continued to keep this same sort of system within themselves? And I mean, like in the 60s, there was tons of assassinations and covert work going on, Cold War. And now, so we've gone up into the 90s, and we're talking about Junior now, and their connection with his death. So in that 30 years, do they just sort of keep it going sort of within themselves? And then are they still doing it now?
It wouldn't even be that hard to do because of their black budget. Their budget is not approved by anything more than a small committee in the Congress that they meet in secret and in private. They have a lot of money that they've had from the drug trade over the years that we talked about in our previous discussion. So they have all these private sources of funding. They can do anything they want. This wouldn't even be that hard to do. They could use a surface-to-air missile. They could use a drone, a bomb. This could be done in a matter of hours if they wanted to. In fact, the airfield that he took off from had no security there. There was no security guards, nothing. They could just land a plane there, that's it, and leave. There was no security guards, no police force, nothing. So it easily could be tampered with if they wanted to.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, but within the administration part, the upper tier, the people that actually, do you think it's just a small within group of the CIA, or is it the whole CIA?
I think it might just be a few key people that wanted to do this. And a number of the people in the late 90s were still alive that were around when the Kennedy assassination had taken place. And even Cord Meyer was still alive, who E. Howard Hunt. E. Howard Hunt was still alive in the late 1990s. A lot of these key people that from the agency that were part of planning the JFK assassination were still alive and well. So even George H.W. Bush, he, of course, is still alive. So is this going to be what they'll continue to do? I don't know. But, again, what I'm trying to do here is, as I said, reverse engineer the crime scene. The Navy lies to the public about the rescue beacon. There is evidence of an explosion. He calls an air traffic control 1 minute before the explosion. He's not suffering from disorientation. He's a good pilot. I mean, if you have all these facts, then you must conclude that there was a crime here, just looking at it logically, like Sherlock Holmes would do.
So now, do any of his family have mm-hmm. made any comments toward his death that you know of?
Not that I know of. I mean, that's the problem here. I mean, Ted Kennedy is dead. I mean, the problem with him is he had no children that could advocate for him. So all we really have is Caroline. I mean, she's still alive. We have the children of Robert Kennedy. They're still alive. So there are a few members of the family that could advocate for this. And one key problem that we have is the bodies were cremated. So we have a hard time just going back to the crime scene with the evidence. And the autopsy report we do have, and I did mention that his autopsy sketch is very strange. It has these dotted lines across his midsection, but his body was blown to bits. And it has the same markings on his arms, too. Like, it was all in pieces, not crunched up together in one spot, like you would expect if it was just down and circling to the earth, into the ground, in the sea, I should say. So it's very strange how all that plays out.
Wow. Interesting case. So what do you got planned next then? After this, do you plan on, do you have another big project lined up for next year?
Well, right now, I just want to kind of focus all my efforts on this. I mean, yeah. This is, I have some other ideas kind of thrown about my, you know, in my future plans, but the book just kind of came out and I'm hoping that I can do all I can to keep talking about this and show people that there's questions that need to be asked so they're ready for next July when we're going to be bombarded with information about this accident and be ready to answer the questions about what I think the book will do. It will serve that purpose. If you get the book, you can read the evidence in there, how I investigated everything point by point, and use it with your family and friends to remember this man's legacy and not be misinformed by our media that he somehow crashed and killed his own family. This was not his fault.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, again, now how do people get a hold of you now? You say people sometimes email you and give you information, or
right.
You have a website or something that everyone should have.
Mm-hmm. Easiest way to get a hold of me is the company website. It's called, again, paranormalwalks.com. So, again, paranormalwalk.com. And that website, with all my, you know, the section of my books. So if you go to the website, again, it's, I guess, you know, it's paranormalwalks.com.
And we're going to have it up on our website under the guest page, under your name. So people, if you do forget it, click there.
And also the books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, too.
Excellent, excellent. And we'll have that posted as well. Well, it's been very interesting. Always good talking to you. And maybe you'll come back and talk to the paranormal gang one night. We have a medium that does Friday nights, so you might like talking.
Oh, that'll be fun, yeah.
Yeah, she's. You never know. You might connect somehow.
Right, that'll be cool. We have a lot of cool ghost stories and pictures and things we've got over the course of the walks.
I bet you it would be good. Well, again, our guest has been John Corner. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks, Al. Be safe.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.